Wind Down with Jana Kramer and Michael Kaufman, an iHeartRadio podcast.
All right, we're just going to get right to it because I got bit by something in Mexico. I got to get this, like, the feeling out of my head because I want to, like, my arm looks like a freaking baseball.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I will say I commend you because you're handling it more like an adult than I probably would. It's those little things that bother me more than anything else.
But, like, I haven't been able to sleep because it's just it itches so bad. Like, nothing is helping. So we just need to get straight to it. I'm so excited because this week my movie that I filmed during the pandemic, essentially, it's called The Welcome Home Christmas on Lifetime. It's going to be airing this Saturday. And so excited because we have a few of the cast members joining us today. And let's get right to it with the one and only country superstar, Craig Morgan. Welcome, Craig!
What up, Yay! Buddy?
It's good. Hey, it's good to see y'all. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, Craig.
I didn't know you was going to be here. That makes it better for me. I got to be honest.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm super uncomfortable around Jana.
Why?
I don't know. You just make me nervous, man.
I make you nervous?
Yeah, your acting is so good that I feel inferior, and generally I'm really good at everything else I do. You know what I mean?
That's how I used to felt until I married Jana. And now I'm insecure about everything I do because I'm like, man, I used to be the best at this until I met my wife.
I used to be a stud until I got married.
Oh my God, Craig.
I love it.
You are crazy because, well, first of all, I just have to give Craig a lot of love right now because he's been the nicest country star of all of them that I've ever met. Always so welcoming. You're so kind. I grew up listening to your music. And then I knew that you did a few acting jobs with, Rizzoli and Isles. I always forget the name of that one. But you were on that show. You've done a few other movies. And I remember reading A Welcome Home Christmas and I was like, Craig Morgan has to play this role. Like, he's just, because you're an Army veteran yourself, and the movie revolves around Army veterans. And so, I mean, do you enjoy acting? Because you're really good at it.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. I love it. I got to tell you. And mainly because there's no band, there's no crew, there's no headache. You know, you just sit in a trailer and wait for them to come and get you, and you pretend to be someone else. Before I started, they asked me, have you ever done any acting? I said, I've been pretending to be a singer for like 12 years. So I absolutely love it. I was always nervous, though, about getting into it. The Rizzoli and Isles was the first piece that I did where I really had a true character role. Mm-hmm. I wasn't playing a country singer or Craig Morgan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I did the Army Wives, but I was a country singer. You know, I played a country singer, and we did some stuff, had a few lines here and there. So when I did Rizzoli and Isles, it was exciting, but I was also a little nervous because, you know, I'm like, you might not be cut out to do this. You just don't know. And I hate not doing something well. Mm-hmm. I try to avoid things that if I'm not going to be able to do it, I just avoid it. And, you know, and it ain't like I won't try to learn something, but I felt like I wanted to do well at it, you know, especially after Rizzoli and Isles, you know, then you get the bug and it's like, God, I enjoyed that. And they were great. They were really good to me. And then we did another Lifetime movie and had a great part in that. I do love it. I just want to do it well. I don't want to be the guy that everybody says, oh, you're really good. And then they go home and they go,
No, I'm serious. Everyone was talking about you behind your back in the best of ways, being like, he's really good and you played the part perfectly. So you made it exciting to go to work, especially during that nervous time.
You know, Craig, I've always wondered how it is to transition to something like that. I mean, granted, I have the perfect candidate with my wife being able to do it, but I feel like there's this relationship right amongst entertainers where every professional athlete wants to be an actor, every actor wants to be a musician, right? And it's this cycle that we all just like appreciate what the other one does because really you're living the dream I wanted to live. I might be living the dream someone else wanted to live. And so how was that transitioning into that, having this name and this brand as being Craig Morgan, you know, the performer, into something where you're back to the bottom of the totem pole, you're trying to prove yourself? Like, how was that going into that? And was that something that you pursued, or did someone start to pursue you into acting?
Man, there's a few questions, but those are, I love what you said first. Let me say this about how we all kind of, you know, like, I want to be a football stud, you know, I want to be a football player. I want to be a baseball player. I want right. to, or I want to be a cop, or I want to be this, you know, I think we all have that almost like a type A personality, but there's multiple subcategories of those type A's. And we all, actors, law enforcement officers, firemen, soldiers, entertainers, athletes, we all share that. Now we have a different, we might be in a different subcategory, but we all are driven. Mm-hmm. I think that is it. I think that's what we do. Now you ask how I transitioned. I'll tell you what I tell people. They ask me how I transitioned from the military into the music, and I say, I'm working on it.
How long did you serve again in the military?
17 and a half total years. Had almost 11 of active and then almost 7 of active reserve.
Wow. Well, thank you again for your service. And I there was a story that you told me when we were filming that your guys didn't know that you wanted to be this country singer. Is my memory correct on that?
No, yes, it is. I would sit around in the barracks and play music, but you know, I was an NCO, especially when I started playing music more. I grew up in and around, I was born in Nashville. So music was always, my dad was a musician growing up. So it was always kind of a part of my life. But when I was in the Army, it was just for fun. You know, it's kind of like sitting around in the evenings when you're off, and we do hang out and play music, what have you, especially, you know, when you're away from home. But I don't know that I don't remember ever sitting down until towards the end of my military active duty time. I had to make a decision. I was at that mark, you know, I was almost halfway to retirement. And it was like, do you stay here and retire out of the Army, or do you get out and try this? And I remember talking to my wife and talking to some of my buddies, my commander. I literally went to my commander, who to this day is a dear friend. He was a full bird colonel. And I sat down and I said, I'm thinking about pursuing the music industry. And I'd just like to get your take, because I was due to reenlist, you know, and go for another 2 or 3 years. And he said, I think if you stay in the Army, you'll be the sergeant major of the Army someday. Mm. He said, but I also think that you have a very special gift, and I think you should try it.
Wow.
It was that guy's advice solely. You know, my parents, my dad was trying to get me to do it, and friends were saying it. But that guy's advice, I'll never forget that, because he felt like I could be the sergeant major of the Army if I stayed in. Wow. And yet he still thought that I should pursue this. I never would have done it, I don't think, if it hadn't been for him. So, you know, it's always kind of been there, but I, like I said, I'm transitioning. So how am I transitioning into the acting thing? I'm working on it, man. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get better. I want to be really good. I want when people, like I was lucky because of the entertainment, because of music and my success in that, I achieved enough notoriety that someone who was a friend of mine said, you should come do Rizzoli and Isles, you know, and it was Angie, you know, she's the lead. And so when she said it, they said, okay, and we'll try it. And, you know, and I did well enough. They, you know, they brought me back, but, and then you do something else, and one thing leads, as you know, Jenna, one thing leads to another. So I just tell you, everything that I get to do, I'm super grateful for it. And anytime, when my son died, I made a decision that I wasn't going to pursue or do anything anymore if it didn't feel like it was good for everybody that was involved. Mm. And so, you know, this movie, especially, it's like, for me, this is a very important, this is a cool thing, because I have a lot of friends that are those guys still to this day that are coming home. I have guys that have been home for a few years that are going through what this movie kind of talks about, what your character is alluding to. You're the person that's trying to help these soldiers come back, get back into society. And so for me, that was really, really cool. It's kind of like if I get to do a Disney movie and my grandkids get to see it, you know?
Yeah, so true.
You know, this is a personal thing for me. So it was really cool.
Yeah. And I remember too, you said that you didn't even think you were going to do music ever again, that you didn't know if, and then obviously you ended up writing the Father, My Son, and the Holy Ghost, which is, I remember I played that for you in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, Craig just wrote this song about his son. And I mean, I was bawling like in the kitchen. He was just like, his eyes were all swelling. And it's such a powerful song. And I can't even imagine what you went through to write that. And I do remember you said something about your wife, how she came out, and if you want to tell that story.
Yeah, she, I got up about 4:30, and my wife's one of those people who goes to bed at 8 o'clock and probably won't get up till at least 6. I mean, she's a good looking woman, so she gets her beauty rest. But I had gotten up at about 4:30, and literally in my head, I was singing in my head some of the lines in that verse and the chorus. It was really weird. So I went downstairs and did something that I had not done since my son had died. And that was, I started writing by myself, waking up. I mean, Jenny, you've had some things wake you up and you want to write it down. When I first started this, I would wake up with an idea and go, oh, I need to write that down. Oh, I won't forget that. You go back to sleep. You get, what was that I was thinking about?
I know.
But then I got started to where I would write things down if something woke me up. Or if I had a great idea, I would write it down. I got a little hook sheet, just like all songwriters do. But for some reason that morning, I didn't just write it down and go back to sleep. I went downstairs and got my guitar. And literally the melody, the lyric verbatim that is on that song is what I wrote in that 3.5 or 4 hours that I was there. And my wife, when I came upstairs, she asked me if I was all right, because I ain't ashamed to say I just cried the whole time. I think she heard me, and I said, yeah, I wrote this song, but I didn't ask her if she wanted to hear it, because I just didn't want her to go through that hurt. She was hurting, I know, listening to me. I mean, since our son died, I try real hard not to get too emotional around my wife, because she's carrying enough hurt anyway. She don't need to carry my hurt. You know what I mean? And people say that's wrong, but I don't really care. That's just kind of the way it is. Mm-hmm. It's what I do. And after I finished it, you know, and like I said, we were kind of talking about, she didn't say, you know, let me hear it. What are you know, all she said was, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'll be all right. You know? And then I thought, man, this is not just something that's, you know, so personal to me. There's something about this song. So I literally called my daughter and told her, and she's like, send it to me. And because she's a writer as well. And I did a little work tape of it, and I sent it to her, and she's like, you got to record this, Dad. Of course, she was crying too, you know. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you have to record this. So, and I never cried. Even then, I'm like, no way. I won't be able to do it. And then I think I called my tour manager, Jerry, and I told him, man, I wrote something. You got to hear this. And I think Jerry's like, you got to let everybody hear this, you know, and played it for management. And before you know it, it was the label. And I'd already finished my album, done, turned in, picking the first single. Everything was done. Mm-hmm. And the label heard the song and said, this is the first single on the new project.
Wow.
So
what do you do with that hurt? You know, where you said if other people that are going through loss as well, and you said that, you know, you have the hurt, how do you cope with the hurt still in your chest and your body?
Boy, you said it, girl. It is in your body. It's in your chest. I pray a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, I pray off and on all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But then there are every once in a while I wail. Mm-hmm. I say wail because it's horrible. I sound like something's wrong with me, you know. But sometimes you just got to let that out, and it's just draining, and you just, you know, and you get it out of your system and you pray. And what I've learned is, and something I heard a priest say, and it's just given me so much confidence in my emotions, is that it's okay to have sorrow and joy. They will coexist. Sadness and happiness do not coexist. So it's okay to be sorrowful. It's okay to feel sorrow, because you can feel joy at the same time. I'm not always going to be happy. That's just life. But I can still be joyful. Even though I might not be happy at that moment, I can still find joy. And my son Jerry is gone, and it hurts every day. And that hurts, and I'm sorrowful for that. But I still find joy in things that happen in my life and my other children. I'm sorrowful that my son is not here, but I'm also joyful that he's in heaven. And mm-hmm. I'm fairly confident. If you ask me if I knew for sure, I'd have to say no. And the reason is because I'm not God. I don't know. But I feel like based on everything that God has told me and showed me in my son's life, I feel confident that he's there.
Well, I mean, that was the question I had too. And it's just, you know, to see you be able to talk about that, Craig, and you know, that's motivating to hear from you and how you're handling that. And I think it's got to be encouraging to people out there who have also had similar losses mm-hmm. and that there is hope to enjoy your day to day, you know, because, you know, a lot of people can't imagine that, haven't suffered such unfortunate loss. So to know that there is some light at the end of the tunnel, as long as you're doing the things that kind of you're talking about. And like you said, it's okay to, you got to let that stuff out sometimes, you know, you got to let those emotions out and kind of cleanse your soul a little bit. But yeah.
Well, we all have a cross that we must bear. Mm-hmm. I mean, and something that I've learned for the most part is I never compare my pain to anyone else's pain mm-hmm. because I don't really know their heart and how their hurt is. Mm-hmm. So I don't do that. But what I do know is that we all have certain pain and we just have to find a place. And for me, it's through my spirit and through my God that to know that it's okay. It's okay to feel that pain. And know that there is joy. It doesn't mean that you'll ever get over it, but what it does mean is that you can live through it.
Very wise words for sure. I got to imagine to your wife, because she, you know, she's dealt with a lot of your transitions as well. I can't imagine being an army wife and or military wife. And then, you know, now, you know, going on the road, because you guys have been together for, was it 30 years?
30 something years.
Yeah. You better figure that part out. But, you know, I mean, that's incredible too, with all the transitions that you guys have had through military, through, you know, you being a chart topping, insanely famous country artist, you know, to now doing acting and everything else that you want to do. What's something, like, is it your wife's just independence, or is it just what kept y'all strong and together?
Well, we've been married, it is 32 years. And in 32 years, we've probably really seen each other like 12 years. you know, you've heard that I was saying absence makes the heart grow fonder. I believe that. Mm-hmm. All of our children were born during leaves of absence from the military they were conceived during leaves of absence. So after you're gone for 9 months, you come home, it's like, woo! You know, so I think the spontaneity, the excitement, and she's, like I said, she's super cute, so that makes it easy. You keep it fresh and you can't take each other too serious. Communication is important, but when I talk to young soldiers, especially guys that have experienced a lot of trauma overseas and combat and stuff like that, I tell them, you know, you got to not be too honest. There's just certain stuff that people in your life don't need to hear. There's other people you can share those things with, and you need to find those other people. It's okay to have those other people in your life. Love is the most important thing, man. I mean, that's it. I'm a Catholic now, you guys. I grew up my whole life a Baptist, but one thing I've learned is that love overpowers everything. Everything. It really does. The more you love, the less time you have for anger and hate and envy and all of those other things that get in our way. Jen, I'll say this. That's one thing I've always felt like when we were around you, And I talk about it all the time. You always have this joyful love that it's almost like you see through all of the imperfections or anything else. You make people feel good and loved, and that's a very special trait. Not everyone, not all humans have that. In fact, I would venture to say that there's a very small percentage of people. My wife is one of those people. Like, my wife will kiss someone on the lip. She's a lip kisser. You don't know him. You just met him. And she's not in a sexual way, but right. in a loving way. She just has so much angelic love. But how do we stay together? It's all of those things. Overlooking our insecurities, our imperfections, and getting beyond it. And after so many years, you know, stuff bothers you less. And as a man, I learned to shut my mouth at certain times and not say what I really think.
I'm still learning that, Craig. I'm still trying to learn that piece.
It took me a long time, and there's still days where I can't do it. I gotta tell her.
Oh my gosh, I love you.
I love it.
Because hey, there's that thing when arguing is not a good thing, but there's almost always the positive after that that makeup stuff.
Oh yeah,
makeup stuff.
There's a silver lining to it for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an album coming out, right?
My album's out. It is out. We haven't pushed the physical product yet.
Oh, okay.
But we released it through all of the anywhere music can be downloaded. You know that commercial. Anywhere music can be downloaded, you can download that.
Perfect. Okay, then everyone download Craig's new album. Is there what's the album name?
God, Family, Country.
God, Family, Country. Everyone go down Craig Morgan's new album and then watch him on A Welcome Home Christmas, which premieres November 7th, 8/7 Central on Lifetime. Craig, it's such an honor. We love you. Thank you for coming on our show.
I love you guys. I really do. Karen, I was telling her who I was talking to this morning, and she said, we've got to have them out. So you guys have to come out tonight.
We would love that.
We would love to. And to your house in Alaska, too, so he can go fishing.
Yes. Oh, I'll show you all the pictures from Alaska and have you come out there.
Okay. Well, text me and let's get something on the books.
All right, sweetie. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate you, man.
See you soon. It took every part of me not to go, it's what I love about Sunday.
Oh, such a good song.
It's such a good song. And then... Redneck, yeah.
That's a bop, na, 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 as the kids say. It's so good. He's just one of those staples, man. And such a great person.
Losing a child. I cannot imagine. Like, that's the one thing I don't know if I could physically handle.
No, I don't even like thinking about it because, it bothers me. But just, I loved his energy around it.
Too.
Yeah, just, that's why I was kind of commending him on that, because just seeing his energy around it, just reassuring you that you can still have happy days and that's okay. You don't have to feel guilt, you know, around that. So he's an amazing person. He really is. You know, I've gotten to know him a little bit with you over the years. You know him very, very well. Mm-hmm. And he's just one of those people, man, that just makes, you know, your day better when you're around him.
1,000%. Yeah. I adore him. So that was awesome. All right, guys, so excited because up next we have my other co-star, Tim Reed, and his wife, Daphne Maxwell Reed. All right, we are so excited. Mike, do you want to do, by the way, before we even start, am I allowed to say Aunt Viv? Am I not allowed to say Aunt Viv?
Girl, if you say Aunt Viv, I'll salute you.
She's the real Aunt Viv. And that's how I was going to introduce her. If you guys don't know those voices, you will when you hear them some more. But we have Mr. Tim Reed, who's most famously known to our generation as the father, Ray Campbell, in Sister, Sister.
Oh, God.
And then the real Aunt Viv, Miss Daphne Maxwell Reed herself.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you guys so much for coming down.
Hi, guys.
We're so excited to have you on Wind Down. Just a little background. I had the pleasure of working with Tim Reed on the movie that comes out this weekend called The Welcome Home Christmas on Lifetime. And, you know, and he's married to obviously the beautiful Daphne. And, you know, I just said this in an interview last week. I said, you were my favorite scene partner because you just come with such grace. And in the beginning, I have to say, I was a little intimidated because, you know, I was like, oh God, I hope he likes me. And, you know, he looks mad or angry and I don't know what to do with this energy. And like, so I was, I was scared. But the more I got to know you and your personality, and like, it was just, you were just so fascinating to me, and I just loved hearing your story. So thank you, you know, for just being so kind and such a great scene partner as well.
Yeah, I was very upset when Jana, you know, told me that she was able to work with you, Tim, and especially the days that she was shooting with you, because this whole pandemic thing ruined, you know, family and friends to come on and see. And yeah. I only came one day, and it was a day that you guys ended up shutting down production. So I was like, this is such a waste. Here, the one time she shoots in Tennessee, like an hour away from our house, I was looking forward to being there and being around people like you, and I couldn't go. So, but yeah, she had nothing but great things to say about you. And so we're excited to talk to you guys.
And you guys have been married for 38 years. So how have you managed to stay married, but also have your careers, especially in such a demanding and also, you know, with being on sets and just being around other people?
It's being able to get away to, you know, we have our careers and we also have our own interests, and we have the freedom to travel individually or together. And you need that debriefing time. You need to be able to get away and come back and get away and come back. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly been one of the parts for me personally.
And we have a basic level of love and trust and support for each other that we want each other to expand with whatever they're dreaming about. And we support that. And supporting that is making compromises and, you know, making decisions according to what you want and what you know your partner wants, and then learning how to fight fair.
That's so huge.
We're still working on that.
Yeah. Yeah, so are we.
Is there a part when you guys have been together so long where earlier in your marriage, because you have that same, you know, occupation, where there's maybe a hint of jealousy here or there? You know, obviously, ultimately, you love and support each other, but there's got to be some of that at some point.
No, we worked together for many, many, many years at the beginning of our relationship. So there was nothing to be jealous about.
That's great.
We were both tired. That's about it.
But you do reach a point where you say, because after a while we said, you know, it's time for us to work separately. You know, it's not so much of us. It's the business itself. This business, you know, it's, I don't have to tell you, it will put you in a box as quickly as possible, because it can control the box. And I never was raised in a box, never been around that kind of structural life. So I don't know how to adapt to it. You know, I'm still trying to figure out what is a husband. It's freelancing. And if you have the freedom and the respect of your partner, and you have the freedom to freelance a little bit, it helps. And I think that's really been, people ask me sometimes, like, I'll be traveling. My friends say, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Brazil. I'll be gone for a few. He said, you going to Brazil? So yeah. He said, your wife let you go to Brazil? And I'm going, yeah. I mean, I don't know how to answer the question, because it's basically how you start the relationship. I was traveling when I met her. We were dating. I took her with me for 6 weeks to travel through Europe and South Africa. So it's not like all of a sudden you get married and I can't travel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
So that's the way it's been. We've always been a traveling team or individual.
That's very cool. And speaking of like being put in a box, Tim, is as actors and as, you know, the kind of shows that you all really, I make up that reach that next level of fame in y'all's careers, there's such a typecasted role, right? With that family friendly comedic role. Mm-hmm. How was that for you two as professionals in your occupation to kind of get out of that and do those projects that are outside of that typecast?
Oh, no problem at all. Whoever calls and says, we got a job for you, we're on it.
For me, I've always was taught, like I said, I never had structure. I don't know what a family structure is. I never had it because I was a bastard child. I didn't know who my father was till late in life. So I never had the structure. It was never, oh, it's dinner time. Ozzy and Harriet to me was like an alien show. I didn't know what anybody was talking about. So with that, I think my thing is to keep aggressively facing change. If I felt like I was being, you know, like when I was doing sitcoms, and I was very successful at sitcoms, at quite a few after KRP, the sitcom business went, people forget, it went bomb. So sitcoms died. You couldn't get anything. I don't care who you were. If it wasn't for Bill Cosby and the Cosby Show, then we wouldn't be, the term sitcom would not be existing in our vocabulary. He saved the sitcom business. However, what do? You come out of sitcom, you're trying to get a job, and all there is these hour comedy style shows like Heart to Heart, like Simon and Simon. So I had to restructure myself. I had to restructure my body. I went to the gym, worked out. I wanted to become somebody who could work in power show. And guess what? I got Simon and Simon. And that
it was quite
years.
Buff. Quite yeah, buff.
But definitely. I'm saying it was changing my whole structure. Then all of a sudden, those shows began to die. And guess what was happening? This new thing in comedy, sort of dramatic comedies. I quit the show and I started searching, and I ended up with Frank's Place. So what I'm saying is that you have to be able to ignore the box. You have to create your own reality. Right now, the reality that the world and we all exist in. One of the things I want to say about this lovely lady who stars in this movie that's coming out is we had a lot of difficulty in making this movie. It had nothing to do with acting or the crew. It was COVID-19. We were one of the first films to have to deal with the restrictions that were put on us by the unions, and not restrictions, but rules, and good rules, by the way. Wearing a mask, all those things, no one had ever gone through that before and make it. And the cost, third day, we had to be tested. Every third day, they sticking stuff up your nose, the whole crew, and then we were on lockdown, as you mentioned. So to see the talent and the crew, it's 80 degrees, we're playing like it's snowing. And yet, those workers, that crew with masks, they had to wear masks 24, every time they're on the set, in 85 degrees, struggling with lights and stands, everybody gave 100%. And I appreciate that kind of work ethic. And I think it shows in the movie from what I've seen.
Yeah.
So you got to keep changing. You got to adjust.
I do agree with that. Daphne, I want to go back to something you said about how you're learning how to fight fair. What does that look like to you in a marriage with fighting fair?
Fighting fair is learning how to listen, not just talk. And we still struggle with that sometimes, but we know some basic ground rules that it's not a do or die situation. They're going to be there tomorrow. Take a pause, refresh, and move on.
I like that. And Tim, you know, you touched on it just a few minutes ago, but you also talked to Brandon and I about this on set, about how you were raised and it was a tough neighborhood. Your upbringing. Yeah. And can you tell the story about Martin Luther King?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have had the pleasure and the incredible experience of having an interaction with Dr. King at a very early age. This was before he was well known internationally or nationally. I was in the late 50s, and he was coming to our church to speak and talk about this thing called the Civil Rights Movement. This was before Montgomery. And I had gotten in some trouble because I was running with a pretty rough group of people, young people, and of which all are dead now, but myself and one other. But and we had gotten some trouble, and it was a matter of me going to reform school or somebody standing up for me. My grandmother, back in the day, as usual with a black family, they took me to the pastor at our church and said, "Talk to him, because we're going to lose him if he doesn't listen." So the pastor looked at me, "So you one of those tough kids, one of them juvenile delinquents?" And I said, "No, sir, I'm not tough at all. I just, I find myself to survive hanging out with these guys." He said, "Well, I got a job for you. I want you to be the bodyguard for this young man coming in called Dr. Martin Luther King. And he's going to speak, and I want you, since we need a tough guy." And I was like, "What?" So myself and another young man who was a brilliant student at school, come from a well-to-do black family. He and I together to be Dr. King's bodyguard for a full day. He got there in the morning and we stayed with him until he left late that evening. And he spoke, we were constantly, when he was doing press, we were standing there next to him. And I will never forget the experience because I had never been around anybody like that. I'd never seen a rock star. This man had gravitas. His whole being was calming to me. I can't even explain it now. It's like, I don't know. I've never been in the presence of anyone that had that kind of effect on me. And the young kid who was with me, between us, we had an experience that I'll never forget. And after that was over, he talked to us about the civil rights movement coming and what he thought the world was going to have to do to give rights to us. And after that, I began to think about that. And when I finally changed my life and ended up in college, I joined the civil rights era. I was the leader of a couple organizations. And then I went and marched on Washington in 1963. And I was beside him for a brief period of the march. And I stood in a tree. I was on a more militant side at that time. I was a president of a group, offshoot of SNCC. And but I listened to him that day when he gave that speech. And again, he changed my life again. I took the nonviolent approach, went back and joined, became president of the NAACP college chapter. And it again changed my life. So on two occasions, his words and his being had such an influence on me as a young man. That's why I am where I am today, because I was certainly going in the wrong path at that time.
Wow, thank you for sharing.
And again, yeah.
I love, by the way, watching Daphne, because she just loves you. You can just tell, like, Daphne, you're just over there smiling and listening to your man. Like, dude, you can just tell there's so much love between the two of you. Like, right? Like,
yes.
Daphne's just smiling.
Later, when we're done with the show, Jana's going to be like, why don't you look at me that way?
I know I will.
I want you to look at me the way Daphne looks at Tim.
Oh, yeah. He's well, it's not always that way. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, this is on camera.
Yeah, this is going to be
a night. Right. You know, that I appreciate you sharing that, Tim. And, you know, from y'all's experience, not only in the industry, you know, being in it so long and being together in it for so long, how have you seen things as of recent as two African-American actors in the industry? Are you feeling the need to take responsibility as in, like, helping to educate people or explain things to people, or how, like, what is your personal take on changing the temperature and the environment of your occupation and just societies in general moving forward?
We have been around for so long that people ask us questions and ask for our guidance. And Tim is great at teaching what you need to know about the business. I'm one of the ones who help inspire people, young people, to take a path. Sometimes they only need a push to get started. But we both have some basic advice that we give to young people. And changing what's happening now is not for us to do. This is not our time. This is young people's time. And we need to keep up with them at this point. All the technology, all the platforms that are available now, there are a lot more opportunities for young people to get involved in this. We just would like to make sure that they get involved with it with a sense of responsibility for the images that they're creating. And that's what Tim is very good at teaching.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm in my legacy period of my career. I'm going through the three-quarter life crisis, trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And I've decided that talk is just that, talk. Everybody's got an opinion. That's what keeps Facebook and Instagram and all these things alive, and Twitter, because everybody's got an opinion. What we need are doers. We need people to do things, not give us a whole lot of opinion. Make change. And you got to do that by doing. So my game is to get in the game, to keep busy, I'm starting a new, why I'm up in Maryland now is because I'm talking to people about creating a new show, trying to give people opportunities. I launched a new television channel, streaming service, Legacy of a People Network, and it's global and it's on the internet. Use these new things, technology to be a part of the action. Sitting back complaining and opinionating and criticizing is doesn't work. Yeah. It may soothe your ego, but it doesn't do anything to bring prosperity to you or people around you. So the thing is to keep busy, keep doing. And that's what I do. I work with young filmmakers around the world. I have associates in on the continent of Africa in several countries. I have associates in England through the British Film Institute. I've met a lot of young filmmakers. And so we're now working together. And a lot of the content I have on the network coming from them. And so it's to keep busy. You know, I act, I write, I produce, I'm a photographer. So it's to keep busy. That's the only thing I know to do. And I'm not allowing this reality that's been thrown on us to be my reality. I'm busier now than I was before COVID. And you have to create your own reality. Mm-hmm. Don't buy into this reality that's being, because it's all opinionated. Nobody really knows who's going to win an election, who's not going to, who cares? Just get busy, vote. You know, you want to change things, vote. You want to do something, get active. Create something, create jobs for other people, create opportunities for other people. That to me is the formula. I'll die doing that.
Wow.
Love that.
Yeah, I'm.
Are you motivated to go?
I'm motivated to go create something.
Ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Give me a job.
I'm fired up. Let's do it. Tim and Daphne, thank you guys so much. For our listeners, don't forget to watch A Welcome Home Christmas, starring my beautiful wife and Tim Reed, and among others, this Saturday, November 7th.
And then Daphne, be sure to catch the fresh Prince reunion show on Thanksgiving weekend on HBO Max. Oh, that's going to be fun.
Can't wait.
It is. And my Christmas movie is on December 1st.
What's it called?
It's called The Business of Christmas, and it's going to be on BET.
Oh, heck yeah. Amazing. Oh, get in the Christmas spirit, everybody. I love
right
it.
And you can go to my channel.
Oh, yes, please.
LGCY of a People Network.com. And that will take you to the platform to show you all the content. We got a lot of content up there. A lot of content.
Oh, I love it. Tim, Daphne, thank you guys so much. Love you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for your time.
Come
we really appreciate
it. Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Aw. The sweetest people.
Yeah. I just want like, not even have
right
them.
About Tim, though, too.
Oh.
Like, I just, every time we were in a scene together, I was just like, will you tell me a story, Daddy?
Grandpa?
Like, Grandpa?
Grandpa, tell me a story.
Papa,
again.
Tell me a story. Like, I was like, what book should I read? What should I do this? And I told him one time, too, I was sitting there, and he was asking about comedy. I was like, oh, I'm not funny. I can't do comedy. And he was just like, don't say that. He's like, you're very funny. Yeah, he's like, I think you're so funny. I thought you only did comedy. And then, you know, and then I was like, you inspired me to do comedy. I was like, he's just so freaking inspiring.
He speaks with such wisdom and calm charisma.
Yeah.
That it's just like you hang on every word that he says. And I love what he just ended with, though. Like, don't make the reality your reality.
Yeah.
He's like, don't worry about what everyone else is saying and doing. Just do what you do.
Yeah.
Just go do it. I love that.
Do you see how, though, in the beginning I was intimidated by him just because he's so
knowledgeable?
But yeah, he's
so
the
intelligent.
Way he carries himself,
oh, yeah,
too,
for sure.
Because I'm always like, hi! So I was like, oh, he hates me.
Tim, give me a hug.
I was like, but my mission was to get him to like crack a smile filming. And I remember the one time I got him to smile, I was like, I got you. I was like, I'm just made. I'm done. I can quit. Like, but he's just so fascinating. I loved working with him. And he plays my general in the movie. General Patton and Chloe was my character. We're just kind of, we're buds. But I really respect him just as I do as a person. So hopefully y'all will see that connection.
Two very, very beautiful people inside and out, Tim and Daphne. Just, wow. Very, very, very cool to talk to them.
And it's like Aunt Viv. Like, it's so cool.
Right.
I grew up watching Fresh Prince.
That was my favorite show. Might be of all time. So, we spoke to just some legends today.
I know. Gosh.
Legends in their games.
Mark, how you feeling over there, dude? Because I know you're a fan of Tim.
I am a fan of Tim. I mean, honestly, you guys have him from Sister Sister. For me, he's WKRP in Cincinnati. He was Venus Flytrap. And that show is a big part of why I'm in radio today. So absolutely super exciting to talk to him. Yes, he was great.
I agree. I think he's so cool. I mean, what a great show, guys.
Yeah, you can't really do any better than that. with those kind of guests.
Mark, what are you doing this Saturday? You going to make some hot chocolate for your wife and sit down and watch a Welcome Home Christmas?
That's right, I am, of course. It's Jenna night.
I know. Woo! Easton's going to do it.
Yes, I am. I've got it blocked off in the calendar.
Aw, you're the best, Easton. Thanks, guys.
You know, hear Jana's plans for it?
Oh, shut up.
So she's having a girls' kind of getaway weekend, like 20 minutes away. They got like an Airbnb, her and some of her friends, and they're going to have like a little watch party. And I was actually looking forward to watching it with Jana. And she's like, well, you can still come. Like, just, you know, we'll get a setup for the kids and you can just come down and, you know, like take pictures of us watching it and like serve us hot chocolate and give us some wine. I was like, so what? I was like, you want me to be like your movie bitch and just like take care of you and all the girls while you watch it? Hey, does anybody need a refill? Okay. I was like,
hey. I think that you're in an apron and nothing else serving
them.
Oh,
yes.
Yes.
Or maybe a little bow tie.
Little boat, yes.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
So that's what Jana wants me to do for the movie.
I mean.
And I was like,
Well, we're going to try to get some other guys so you can come down too.
We'll have a guy watch party.
You won't watch it then. You'll be like, guys, I got to watch the beginning, the middle, and the end so I know what happens.
It would be like that time, did I tell this story before on here? When I had a summer reading project. The end of the summer, my mom was like, all right, tell me what the book was about. And she was like, what was the main character's name? I was like, he didn't have one. she turned over the back of the book. It said the main character's name on the back of the book. I didn't even read the back of the book. I was like 12 years old. So this would be like that with the movie. She'd be like, yeah, so did you watch the movie? Yeah. Oh, what was my character's name? Nah, you didn't have one, did you? They just called you a therapist.
Therapist.
His name was The Great Gatsby.
Yes.
And he was great.
That is so funny. All right, guys. Well, love you. Great show. And talk to you next week.